The wizards gather. 8.
Oh, wait, fuck. Okay, I got it now.
Music.
I got it. All right, shut up.
The wizards answer 8 by 8. The conclaves call to demonstrate their arcane gift, their single spell. They number 64 until a conflagration. 63 and 62 they soon shall be, as one by one the wizards die, till one remains to reign on high.
Hello and welcome back to The Adventure Zone. I don't know why I said back. This may be your first season. I don't know you. I don't know you from Adam Soft Fox. This is Griffin McRae. I'll be your dungeon master this season. Joining me, as always, we got my brother, Justin. What's up, Juice?
Hey, what's up? It's me, Justin McElroy. So happy to be back with you again on The Adventure Zone. Another great season lined up for you.
I'm in my head now that this is the first season someone's listened to, and now I feel like I'm doing this way too formal.
We should go back to the beginning. So, Dad was born in Ohio.
Mm-hmm. You remember the year?
1931.
1955.
So close. August of 55.
I guess we'll do things out of order. Dad's also here. He's still kicking. Still playing. Still rolling.
Dad McElroy.
Wait, what order were you going in?
I don't know, man.
Still rolling. A lot of people, Dad, where there was a lot of theories that you weren't going to be in this one, but you were here again. Yeah.
Well, every time I post a picture on Instagram, people think it's a death notice. So,
Man.
Maybe I've dodged that bullet this time.
I've held off on making like thoughtful Father's Day posts just because I'm so worried that someone's
absolutely
gonna
it'll clock like that. We got Travis on the ones and twos.
Yeah, hi, I'm Travis. Up in the mix. Hi, it's me. I'll be playing this season.
Yes, you'll be playing, I will be GMing, and everyone will be having the time of their lives. I want to start things off with a few sort of clarifications before we get started with Tazel Royale. First, even though our last experiment in modesty, which was Taz Abnormals, had no cursing in it, this one absolutely will.
Now, you don't know that.
Yeah, man, I mean, you don't fucking know that.
You don't know that.
Bastard
people.
So, if that is something that is a consideration for you, then you should stop listening. No, don't. Keep
or
listening.
Keep listening and expand your horizons.
Learn a thing or two. Second thing, as we have kind of announced, this season is our All Wizards Battle Royale style season. I know some people have some worries about a sort of like PvP campaign. I want to be clear before we get started. This is Battle Royale, not in the Fortnite sense, literally the movie Battle Royale sense, where it's everyone's killing each other all the time. This is more of a competition, a Squid Game, if you will.
A lot of people died in Squid Game.
A lot of people got down on Squid Game.
A lot of people died in Squid Game. Sorry. I said a lot of people die in Squid Game. So I'm not sure.
This is more like Physical 100.
This one's only got 64 people in it.
Okay. Are you trying to clarify the number of people that will have their earthly lives snuffed out? Is that the clarification you want
to make?
This
is Magical 64, which would have been a way better name for the season, but we already got the key art made for it. Last thing, today's episode, just to sort of set expectations, we're going to meet our characters, and we're going to learn a little bit about this world and the Fold and the Conclave, and I want to be really clear that I was planning all of this before the Pope stuff happened.
Yeah.
That word was not really highly in circulation, Conclave, recent
movies.
I thought in the intro you said Cornclave.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Griffin, you are so lucky that you told us to hold our tongues, because I could feel a psychic wave when you said cornclave that all of us wanted to, like, oh, please, just one quick. I just want one kernel of truth I want to add to that.
You're making,
kernel.
You're making fun of an accent right now. Do you feel good about that, Juice? You're making fun of an accent. Are you feeling great, right? Feeling big, feeling tough?
I'm throwing old big stone through my glass house, aren't I?
You sure are.
A frightful big stone indeed, Governor.
Let's begin. Travis, the velvety padded doors of the trial chamber swing shut behind you, sealing with a bright green arcane glyph. You turn away from the door to face the room before you. It is a cramped octagonal space carved of white marble, nearly featureless save for the large numeral one set into the floor with gray tile. Positioned at the center of this room, immediately above this carved one, is a chair made of woven white birch sitting in front of a wide column, and a figure has been carved into this column. It is a young man, his arms crossed before him, all white marble save for his eyes, where two cloudy disks of onyx have been set. And as you enter the room and approach this chair and this young man carved into the column, you realize this figure is nearly identical to a younger version of yourself, Rictus Ravenwood IV. Travis, describe Rictus Ravenwood IV for me.
A high elf. He is a moon elf, so he has bluish skin. And he is dressed pretty traditional goth ideals, but everything is in a neon palette. I've been envisioning it like if you went to like a roller rink or a laser tag place in the late 90s.
Yeah.
He has neon green hair kind of swooped down over his eyes. A lot of like neon orange fishnet. And he's wearing a like neon pink, neon green tie-dyed tank top.
You guys are going to change clothes like as soon as you get in here. So like don't spend so much time on that. Like you're going to get a new shirt.
Yeah. And he's very gaunt.
And when you say traditional goth, are we talking sort of necromancer fantasy style, or are we talking about like mall goth?
Like mall goth.
Got you. Rictus, you enter this room. You see this statue carved into the column in front of this chair that looks like a younger version of yourself, and you hear a voice call out from no sort of discernible direction. You hear it say,
"Please be seated and lower any psychic defenses you may possess."
Is there a chair?
There is a chair of white woven birch.
Sorry, man, just sit in the chair.
Speak up, please.
Sorry, this chair, the wood, the woven one?
Aspirant, there is but one chair in the room.
I didn't want to assume. Sorry, man, yeah.
And he sits in the chair.
There is a brief fanfare of horns through the walls, and this voice says,
"Welcome to the trial of divination, the first of the Conclave's 8 trials, and the first magic received by this world from the Mother Realm. Divination is the study of secrets divulged and received. As you enter these trials, the 8 archwizards of the Octave would seek to know you completely. All you must do to pass this trial is reveal to us your past and present, and in exchange, we will show you a glimpse of the future that awaits the victor of this conclave."
Oh, sick, man.
"If you consent to the terms of the trial, gaze into the eyes of your stone figure, and we shall explore your past. Should you refuse, the door to the outside world will be open to you, and your aspiration shall be forfeit."
Rictus gazes as hard as he can.
Okay. Are you sort of, you start to feel immediately a sort of psychic influence upon you. The fold, the world where this story takes place, is an extremely magical place. I assume all of you as practitioners are familiar with at least sort of what it feels like to be under the effect of a spell. This is happening to you right now. Mm-hmm. Do you try and resist or give in?
This is his grandmother is a divination person who does, you know, a lot.
Everyone's got a divination grandmother in this
everyone's
world.
Got a divination grandmother. That's got to be official. And she doesn't have a lot of, like, personal boundary conception, so he has had to put up with this a lot. So he's very used to it, and he's okay with it.
We're going to need to talk about Rictus's relationship with his grandmother at some point.
Well, his whole family in general. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Well, let's get into it. You look up into these onyx eyes, and the fog inside of them begins to swirl, and your senses are consumed. In the world of the Fold, where our story takes place, everyone is bestowed a single magical talent from the moment of their birth. Not everyone discovers the spell, which they and they alone have been granted, and fewer still are willing to spend the thousands of hours of study required to truly master their one arcane ability. As this divination magic scans through your past, Rictus, its focus settles on one of your most poignant core memories. You remember the moment that you discovered the nature of your unique gift. Take us back, Rictus, to the moment where you discovered your one magical spell as we learn a little bit about your character.
Rictus was 7 years old. From birth, basically, as soon as, you know, he was able to, like, sit up, his family, there's a lot of pressure. It's a family of necromancers.
They put pressure on a baby?
I mean, basically, they started, like, looking for the magic to manifest.
I guess if everyone has a power, as I just said, there will be a Jack-Jack situation every now and then.
Well, and like instead of like toys and stuff, he was given a lot of like dead body parts to see if he would animate them. His father is a baron of an area called the Crossroads and the Breathless Fields.
Oh, mine too.
Cool.
I didn't know we could just say it. Sorry.
So there's, and he is the only child.
I have two barren dads.
Awesome.
Both my dads are barren.
We'll come back to that in your flash. Okay. Flash.
Yeah.
Back.
My mother is barren.
All right. Next.
Sick. He is an only child, as every Ravenwood baron has been, because of the blessing curse.
Deleting sibling NPC names?
Yeah.
Let's go back in the hopper.
He hasn't had a lot of experience with other people, so Rictus doesn't know if 7 is like a normal age for it to manifest, but with the pressure on it, it happens. And so Rictus is sitting at the table where he sits most days to practice under his parents' watchful eyes with all these like sickly, you know, woodland creatures around that he's kind of being pressured to test his power on.
Okay, I like that you're sitting at a desk, 7 years old, little Rictus Ravenwood the IV. A desk filled with dead critters. Your mother, did she have a name, or may I?
Go for it.
Your mother, Somna Ravenwood, doesn't have a number. That would be wild. Somna Ravenwood is just kind of like perched on your desk, staring at you, her face still like a almost a creepy mask. So intense is the pressure that she is putting on you. You may not know other kids who are living sort of a similar life as you. I think even with that sort of isolation that you experience, you probably have an inkling that this is pretty intense for 7 years old. Seated in the corner in a rocking chair made out of bones, reading a newspaper made out of bones, is your father, Baron. Did he have a name?
Rictus Ravenwood the IV.
That makes so much sense, and I'm so glad that you said it in the tone you did, because that's exactly what I deserved. Rictus Ravenwood the IV, sitting, reading his bone paper.
And over his shoulder is the ghost of Rictus Ravenwood the II.
Uh-huh. And over his shoulder is another smaller ghost of your great-grandfather, Rictus Ravenwood the I.
That's
and
correct.
They called him the I, too, which is fucked up.
Well, with the blessing curse, he knew he would have a son.
Yeah. Cool. Your mother says, again, Rictus, again, remember, we want the life spirit to disperse from the object. Do not think of it as a draining, like drinking a drink with a straw. It is a dispersal, Rictus.
Okay.
Again.
Can we take a break?
We will take a break after your 500th murder. Now begin. You're at 126. We're going to have a long afternoon, Rictus.
Okay.
And he places his hand on the, like, a sickly chipmunk-looking creature.
Maybe a chipmunk?
Well, but it's not quite. I mean, in the Breathless Fields, everything's,
like,
weird.
Fucked up?
Yeah.
I like that. Okay.
And he grimaces and, like, beads of sweat, you know? And then there's a sickly green kind of glow. And when he moves his hand, the chipmunk is, like, fully dead.
Somna leaps up, shouts, and your father, Baron Rictus Ravenwood III, Baron of the Crossroads in the Breathless Fields, hops out of his bone rocking chair and comes over, puts his hand on your shoulder and is like, "Wow, son, amazing work. Did you crush it with your hand, or was this an honest necromantic spell?"
No, it was the spell.
Oh, mother, he's done it. I'm so proud of you, son.
And look what else. And Rictus moves his left hand, and there was another chipmunk under there, and there's, like, a pink glow, and that chipmunk is healed.
Your spell that Rictus Ravenwood IV possesses, since this moment and practiced onward, is Wither and Bloom. Specifically a slightly weaker homebrew version of Wither and Bloom in the first level, as you are all level one wizards as we begin the game. Your mother looks confused. Your father leans down and picks up this chipmunk that you just brought back to life. And he says, Rictus, what is this?
Well, so you were talking about the life dispersing, and that seemed like a bit of a waste, and so I thought if I could take from there and give to there, it would, like, balance it a little bit more.
Somna faints, and then stands up, and then faints a second time, and then she climbs up.
Double faint.
Back onto the desk and says, "Balance? It is not our family's job to be concerned with balance. By ensuring the death and entropy of these lands, we are balancing. Well, life is not our domain, Rictus. You must forget this part of this spell and just kind of do the first half."
But it's connected.
Possible? We'll practice that 500 times, doing just the murder and none of the bringing back to life stuff.
But it's connected, right? Because, like, the you know, like, it dies and would fertilize the thing, right? And then grows. So this way...
Somna faints in the middle of your explanation. Your father, the Baron, faints too. Like, sees her faint.
Did the ghost, like, faint?
All but your great-grandfather, his ghost, who you think, like, nods at you, but his ghost is so small right now.
Yeah.
So old. And as we all know, as ghosts get older, they shrink down and get smaller.
Yeah.
Your father stands up and says... Okay, we will continue practicing this. I'll call in some of our experts in the field. I think we had a great grand uncle once whose magic was also a little weird, so I can find his body and reanimate him, ask him 5 questions, the huge. And listen, sport, it is a little bit weird. We usually only kill and not revive, and we have a certain reputation to uphold, and the barony has a reputation to uphold, but it's nothing to worry about. I will ensure that your little snafu gets ironed out, but let's not go ahead and cast that anymore until we figure this thing out together as a family. Isn't that right, mother? She's asleep. Yes. So remember, it's a secret. Your senses return, Rictus, and you are back sitting in the first trial chamber. The statue that resembles this seven-year-old version of you that you just saw begins to rumble as its right arm slowly descends, extending its hand out in front of you, and from the walls of the room, that voice calls out again and says, "Aspirant, by your participation in the conclave, you wager the very magic that brought you to our doors. Should you claim victory, your power will grow an unimaginable magnitude. If you agree to these terms, grasp the hand of your effigy."
So if I win, then I get more magic, and if I lose, my magic goes away?
You understand the terms, yes. More magic is a reductive way of referring to the power that you will be afforded should you win.
We prefer mega magic.
We prefer turbo magic.
Super duper.
Mondo magic. Yeah.
The only trademarkable one was uber magic. With the, but you have to do an umlaut or you'll get sued by Uber. It's Uber magic.
What do you do, Rictus?
Rictus thinks for a second and then, like, half under his breath,
seems win-win,
and grabs the hand. Is that what he's supposed to do?
Yes, you grasp the hand of your effigy, this cold hand before you, and a silent moment passes, and then those black onyx eyes begin to rattle before emitting a blinding flash of brilliant light.
Hey, a couple of quick announcements, too, before we get back to the episode. We've got a bunch of cool stuff over at macromerch.com. If you haven't checked it out, you need to go do that. 10% of all merch proceeds this month will be donated to Border Angels. Macromerch.com, check that out. Also, Griffin's book, The Stowaway, is out now. It's a choose-your-own-adventure. Go to bit.ly/GriffinStowaway and get all the information there or find it at a local bookstore.
Thank you, Travis.
You're welcome, Griffin. And Justin's great, too. He does cool things.
Whatever.
All right. Back to the show!
Max Fun Meetup Day is on Thursday, April 23rd. Max Funsters from all over are getting together to hang out and celebrate their favorite podcasts. Want to go and meet some friends who like similar stuff and care about the same things as you? Head to MaximumFun.org/meetup to see where and when your local meetup is. Don't see one nearby? Host your own and make some new pals. All you need to do is pick a place that can hold a small group. A bar, cafe, park, library, wherever. Then fill out the form at MaximumFun.org/meetup. We'll add you to the page and help get the word out. So go to MaximumFun.org/meetup and maybe we'll see you on April 23rd.
Hello, this is Alden Ford.
And Mujan Zulfikari.
Two of the creators of Mission to Zix, your favorite improvised, obsessively sound-designed sci-fi sitcom here on the Max Fun Network. And the news is...
We're back! With an all-new miniseries set in the Zix universe, The Young Old Derf Chronicles.
Yeah.
Will Derf find his own killer before it's too late?
Ooh.
To find out how that question could possibly make sense, well, sure. You just have to tune in.
Yeah, and as always, it's ambitious and labor-intensive to a frankly absurd degree.
Indeed.
So if you are looking for a little break from your own galaxy, we would love for you to check it out.
That's The Young Old Derf Chronicles. Search Mission to Zix, Z-Y-X-X, in your podcast app.
Or on MaximumFun.org.
Keep it fresh.
Justin.
Yes, Griffin.
Ready yourself.
I'm prepared. I'm ready to pretend.
Brace your ass for imagination.
In a separate but identical trial chamber, you release the enormous hand of your stone effigy, having agreed to its first condition. Its arm raises back up to cross its chest, and then the entire figure begins to rumble as the column into which it is etched slowly rotates. As it grinds to a halt, you see a different figure is now facing the chair in which you sit, a chair that you still don't quite trust to fully support your considerable frame. This figure also resembles you, not from your distant past, but as you are today. Justin, please describe and introduce, and I saw this name for the first time this morning, Lorevith Dream Wanderer Gonjabon.
No, well, technically, Lorevith Gonjabon Dream Wanderer, his middle name. It's just the way the sheet mixes it up.
So what's one mo again, please?
Lorevith Dream Wanderer Gonjabon.
Well, wait, you just said Dream Wanderer is the last name.
Mm-hmm. So Lorevith Dream Wanderer Gonjabon. That's what we're settling with. Yes, we're going with this. Yes.
You want correct. Gonjabon to be last name, or do you want Dream Wanderer to be last name?
Well, I think it's more appropriate for looking at Goliath culture for Dream Wanderer to be the middle name.
Okay.
Gonjabon's the last name. Yes.
Are you settled on Lorevith being the first name? You could be yes. Gonjabon Lorevith Dream Wanderer.
No, Lorevith is first.
Okay, great. Fantastic. Okay, describe your Goliath wizard for us, please.
Yeah. Lorevith is approximately 7 feet tall. Looks kind of like Tom Hardy, but a lot grayer. Got markings on his skin. Goliaths have these skin modeling. Some people mistake for tattoos, but it's just more akin to like a birthmark. And it's just and he's wearing some leather armor. Pretty simple, but well, you could tell it's well used. It's been through a lot. That's his story.
What kind of, I don't know what Goliath age looks like. So I guess not a specific number, but what sort of era of his life?
He would look to be someone in the sort of later prime of his life. He's not a young guy, but he still seems full of vim and vigor.
Okay. And Tom Hardy, I do just want to make clear, is 5'9".
So, like a huge Tom Hardy. So, like, if you can use the power of your imagination for a second.
To imagine a big Tom Hardy?
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, I'm GMing this season.
Grab the corner of your Tom Hardy window and just, like...
hold shift.
Just hold control-T to... Yeah. You don't actually have to control anymore in Photoshop 25.
Okay.
It defaults.
Okay.
It's like, I'm just giving you a type, man.
Tall Hardy. I get it. I love it. It's good.
Tall Hardy.
You look up at the face of your giant white marble figure, having just explored your past, the moment of your power's arrival. You hear that voice rumble through the walls again. It says,
"The Archwizards of the Octave thank you for revealing to us the events that shaped your past. Now, we would ask you to show us your present. Your life as you know it now in the days leading up to your arrival at this conclave. If you consent to this request, gaze into the eyes of the statue before you as before, should you deny our terms. The door to the outside world will be opened for your retreat."
What do you do?
I go for it. Yeah, no hesitation.
You look upward and look into these eyes and see the onyx begin to become very cloudy. I ask you, do you resist or do you give into this psychic spell that is being cast?
I give into the psychic spell. I'm not fighting it at all.
Great. Your senses are consumed once again. The 8 Archwizards of the Octave are the supreme power of the Fold in more ways than one. From their mighty floating ziggurat in the sky, they police the use of magic of the world, sharing whatever wisdom they decide the inhabitants of the lands below are ready for. They are a secluded lot, never revealing themselves to the lesser wizards of the Fold, but legend of their comprehensive grasp of all magics are known by all. The Conclave is held once every few generations when one of the 8 members of the Octave resigns. The details of what happens during a conclave are unknown to any living person. Similarly unpredictable is the date that a conclave would be called, given the Octave's general elusiveness. Lorevith, I want you to describe what your day looked like the day that you received your invitation to the conclave. A little slice of what a just a normal day looked like before sort of everything changed.
Okay. There are four stumps, and they're in a quadrant, a big square, probably about 10 yards separating each one. Lorvis stands on a smaller stump about 6 inches off the ground. There are other Goliath perched on the other stumps in a sort of like quadrant around him. He is standing with both hands extended out and a Goliath across from him, who we know to be Norrin, holds a big ball in the air and is getting ready to chuck it at Lorvith.
Okay. I don't know what's going on, but let's...
We're playing goat ball.
Goat ball, wonderful.
Yeah.
Goat ball, wonderful. Let's get a... are you trying to hit this? But what's going to... You tell me what the intention is to happen next. I think it would be fun to roll for sports just to really get this season started off on the right foot.
I'm ready, Norrin. At any moment, toss the ball. I'm ready. It's been your sixth attempt in a row, Norrin. Please give me the glory of a seventh catch.
I'm definitely going to hit you with it this time.
You're attempting, so goat ball, we're attempting, it's like a dodgeball kind of deal.
Okay.
So you're attempting to catch it. Or get pegged, but don't fall off.
Okay,
right?
I got you. Let me try that again then.
Never mind, I forgot the rules. Get ready to get pegged.
He's going to launch it at you. Maybe
our
just
first
a dex-
t-shirt.
I think a dexterity saving throw, or perhaps just athletics, right? This is a sport.
It's a sport.
I would say athletics, actually.
Okay. That's actually what I think you would actually roll in the rules for goat ball success.
It says
I'll
that
show
actually.
You some maps later if you want to do it. 9 plus 3 is 12.
With a 12, you are able to grab this ball out of the air. You sense that he didn't throw full strength because he's still not 100% sure what the rules of goat ball are. And I sympathize with Norrin on that. You now have the ball.
A fine attempt, Norrin. A fine attempt.
Am I out?
No, Norrin. Now, Norrin. Now I get my chance at an unprecedented 10th victory.
And then I'm going to chuck it not at Norrin.
Oh, fuck.
But to the left at Zapoff.
Shit.
Oh, I never would have seen that classic. Oh, it's so good.
My, we didn't see this one coming.
We're going to roll and see how Zapoth does. I mean, Zapoth gets an 18.
But I'm going to need advantage because Zapoth was not expecting that. I set up the whole thing.
That's a fair point. You get a round of surprise on Zapoth as he tries to dodge out of the way with his athletics check, which is just a 9, sadly. Zapoth goes,
"How did you say? Why is the ball so hard?
Zapoth, food picker Nalakamune, you have embarrassed your tribe."
All right, man, it's just goat ball.
He gets off his stump and walks away.
I'm out, right?
As you are playing this game of goat ball, you hear a rustling in the trees just outside of the clearing where the goat ball field is set up. And you see a team of non-Goliath, human, elf, half-elf wizards in school garb. And some of them are holding what look like bats in their hands. There's some balls with weird holes in them. And you see a figure approach you wearing one of these uniforms, and he says,
"I'm terribly sorry, Lorvith, but it is time for softball league. I will need you and your friends to please clear off the field."
Of course, actually. The challenge of this was becoming a rather disappointment.
Yes. I need you actually to speak with the groundskeeper. We've been doing some remodeling, some renovations, and so we're moving some stuff around. And so, unfortunately, we will need to move the goat ball field a little bit deeper into Spiderfang Hollow to make room for the new library wing.
You retrieve the ball and stand back on your stump. Norrin says,
"Can I just get myself out?" Because it looked like you really hurt Sapath with the ball, and I'm not trying
Sapath was only hurt because Sapath did not catch it. If Sapath had caught it, Sapath would have the valor today.
Okay, but it did look painful, and I actually...
And then I toss the ball.
All right.
No, just kidding.
Norrin?
This is a fun... We're having fun here. The game is over.
Oh, okay.
I won. So when I say the victory... I won the goat ball game with the last attack I did.
Okay.
So, congratulations for me.
You look over on the fourth stump at Gracon Root Picker, the closest thing you have to a rival here in your Goliath tribe.
Gracon, did you see?
Yes.
Your brother Agvek, his record has been shattered by Lorovith, Dream Wanderer Gonjaban.
Yes, I'm sure you feel very accomplished, beaning Sapath, a Goliath that a human child could defeat in goat ball if they were large enough to lift the goat ball.
I would have tossed it your way, Gracon, but I would have been too worried about shattering your delicate bones.
Well, are you challenging Gracon?
Sorry.
Very well.
Gracon is... a bit bigger than you are. How magical are the Goliaths? Like I said, every sort of like being
right. So Goliath are obviously like physically pretty dominant,
right?
And so they do not, as a rule, tend to go into the magical arts, I think, or focus on that. I think that for the Goliath in this world, I think that the ones who have focused on their talents and tried to work on them are the ones who. For whom it could have some practical purpose.
Okay.
For the tribe, something that they could do to help.
A handful, maybe, of people on your tribe do.
I feel that, yeah, and I feel like for some, it's maybe more of like a novelty. You know what I mean, or something, or like not even a big part of their day to day lives.
Gracon says,
"I'm terribly sorry, Lorovith. You did besmirch my pride with that comment." And now it is my terms through which we shall put this grief aside. I'm afraid I need you to return to your stump for a sudden death lightning round of goat ball.
It would be my honor, Gracon!
And I slap him on the shoulder as hard as I can and head on over.
Okay. He takes the goat ball from Norrin, who then just like runs off into the brush.
Crying.
Gracon. What's that?
Crying. Check for crying? Roll for crying?
No, I don't think. Goliaths don't cry.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's like a real problem in the whole society.
Pretty toxic.
Gracon takes the goat ball up and rears back to toss it. In your direction, he hums it, but good. Gracon is a big, beefy fellow. What do you Dang. Do?
I'm going to roll athletics against it.
Okay.
It's like literally all I can do. Oh, my gosh. What a moment. what a moment. That's 2+3, 5.
The goat ball smashes into your face. Your hands are just a little bit too slow, and you go wobbling backwards off of the stump. And you take 2 points of bludgeoning damage.
Can you imagine your friend throwing a ball at you so hard it 1/5 killed you? I mean, can you even imagine?
Yeah,
you're
I forgot.
7 feet tall, and your friend throws the ball at you so hard, you're 1/5 more dead.
Yeah. When I had this idea of like, what if it was a battle royale season, all wizards starting at level 1, and then I looked at your guys' HP, and I was like, this maybe was a bad idea.
We are made of gelatin.
You are gelatin boys. As the ball kind of rolls to a halt next to you, Gracon yells,
"I'm not yet satisfied. It is your ball, Lorovith.
Excellent. All right, I've returned to my post.
Okay.
See, Goliath are very competitive, but cheating or any sort of, like, trickery or anything would be super out of line. So I'm not trying to, like, reinvent the wheel here. I just got to keep taking my chances. That's a one. That's actually a one that I rolled there.
You... Chuck.
This was not supposed to be a defining moment for this character, but it's like he's now failed so badly now. It feels like a trajectory, like some path of destiny has been forged here by his terrible, terrible inability to beat Gurkhan at goat ball.
He catches the ball effortlessly, and you put all the mustard on it that you could handle. He sighs and says,
I'm sorry, this is just not sporting. It's not doing it for me. Perhaps just a normal battle would suffice.
And he holds up a hand towards the sky, and as he does so, a chunk of earth rips out of the ground, and he says,
let's see if you can catch this.
And he hurls it at you.
Cool. Okay. Excellent. I will cast Lightning Lure to create a lash of energy that strikes one creature in front of my choice that I can see within 15 feet. I'm going to use Lightning Lure to try to deflect the stone.
Are you aiming at the stone or are you aiming at Gurkhan?
I'm aiming at the stone.
Okay, cool. Make your attack roll here.
Okay.
Or is this a save situation?
Maybe I could just be against, maybe the roll is against Gurkhan, but the, you know. Like
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, okay. Gurkhan will try and make this strength save. We're trying to beat strength 12. That is a 9. Your lightning lure, what's it look like?
It's like a, looks almost like a wisp of frost. Like a breath that you exhale when it's really cold with more ice crystals in it, and it kind of crackles with what could only be described as a dark electricity.
People have tried to describe cold. It a different way. But
yeah. Can only be described as a cold electricity.
But it's impossible. You can't.
They tried.
You can't describe it any other way. Some things are more than words.
Yeah.
Some things you really have to see. Honestly, Griffin, my words can't do it justice. I won't even try. You have to see it to believe it.
It's like trying to describe like a sixth dimension, Griffin.
Sure, my mind can't possibly
conceive. Have you ever heard the wolf cry to the blue corn moon, Griffin?
I have not.
This is what...
No, not to the blue corn cliff moon have I heard the wolf cry. Your lightning lure whips through the rock, splitting it dramatically. The two lobes of this chunk of earth roll to either side of you. As you prepare a counter or to brace yourself, as Gurkhan leaps off of his stump, the battle, which has now drawn quite a crowd, is interrupted by a discordant 8-toned horn sounding from above, and all Goliath eyes look upward to the flying island with the octave ziggurat on it. It is blocking out the sun, casting a shadow over the Goliath village here. And surrounding this floating island, 64 pinpricks of light appear in the sky over the structure, whirling in a circle around the island before dispersing and falling to the ground like meteorites. And Lorovith, you see an 8-sided crystal soar towards where you are standing. And as it approaches, you're holding your breath, you see it zooming towards you before curving at the very last second to land in the hands of Gurkhan, Root Picker. And he looks down at it, looks up at you, and just bellows a big, hearty laugh. And he says,
perhaps we should put our petty squabbles aside. It would seem the gods have chosen the victor for us.
So what happens then? I mean, I'm just watching. You got this crazy crystal. I'm on pins and needles over here, Griff.
The crowd assembled walks forward, and they begin to pierce at Gracon to some sort of kneeling. This is a momentous occasion. And then there is a whizzing sound that cuts across the crowd, and instinctively, because of the goat ball you've been playing, you reach up your hand and catch an identical crystal from the sky. And Gracon looks up at you with shock and a little bit of malice.
Well, Gracon, it seems you've spared the Lamenters the work of exiling you.
He stands and says,
"Fuck you, dude."
Here's what he says. Here's what he says. He says, "Come back," because Lorvis says, "First to the conclave wins."
No, wait, hold on. It's not for 2 days. You take off running towards the meeting point described on the crystal. And now this scene, whatever magic is sort of like going through your memories of the past few days, it zooms forwards leading up to your ferrying across the crystalline still waters of Loch Reach, where the Octave Ziggurat and its artificial surrounding island had sort of temporarily docked. This vision goes through the moment you sort of passed through these 64 stone archways carved into the underside of the island, and then through your passing through this padded door, sitting down beside your stone effigy, exploring your past. And then you have the like really disorienting feeling as your memories catch up to the present moment. Leaving you back in the seat, facing your marble doppelganger as it slowly extends its hand, and you hear the voice say,
"Aspirant, by your participation in the conclave, you abandon the world and its ways as you know them. Within these walls, truths concerning the fundamental underpinnings of the fold itself will be illuminated to you. You will never again walk the world in the manner you are accustomed after understanding the world in this way. If you agree to these terms, grasp the hand of your effigy."
"May I say one thing first?"
"Go right ahead."
"Gracon was extremely lucky that day. I want it made clear. 8 out of 9 times I would have caught both of those. He was extremely lucky and there was a great deal of sun."
There's a pause. You hear...
"Should you have chosen other memories, you would have seen a much different scene. This is all I wish to say."
That voice pauses for a moment, and then you hear it say,
"It shall be very exciting to watch the two of you squash your beef."
That's what he says?
That's exactly what he says.
He says squash your beef.
Yeah. But that's okay, like a Goliath term. It's like not, it doesn't mean, it literally means like hitting each other's meat. Like it doesn't mean what it means.
Just
on
two
Earth.
Meaty two men big, slapping
big,
meat.
Two big meaty men Goliaths.
Smashing beef.
Smashing earth-colored meat.
What do you do? The statue's hand is sort of stretched out in front of you, asking you to agree to these terms.
I give it a big meaty firm handshake.
Okay. You reach forward and grasp the stony hand before you, and a silent moment passes, and then those black onyx eyes begin to rattle and again emit a blinding flash of light. Dad!
Mm-hmm?
In yet another separate but identical trial chamber, you release the hand-like appendage of your stone effigy, having now agreed to its first 2 conditions. And once again, the statue's arm grinds back upwards over its chest as the column at the center of the room rotates, revealing a final version of you. And this one is sort of the most startling. It is an older version of you, but not like worn down and weary looking. You know how some people get when they get a little bit older? Do you know?
No,
do you know?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Do you know what I mean by that, Ned?
Mm-mm. Sometimes, Dad, as the body ages, the light leaves the eyes.
Yes.
The vigor is gone.
I choose not to accept that inevitability.
Okay.
That's good. That's good.
They're talking about me, Dad. They're talking about me. Okay, thank you. You're being very kind. Thank you.
Yeah, I see. I see it then.
This is not a frail version of yourself. This is in many ways, this is you perfected. You see carved onto your body are robes etched with these meticulously drawn runes. One thing about this particular effigy stands out. While the statue is still carved of white marble like the others with the onyx eyes, it is also wearing what looks like a gauntlet of finely woven leather that reaches up past its elbow-like joint. A real gauntlet, not a part of the carving. I keep saying, like, hand-like and elbow-like, because the figure you're sitting before is distinctly not human. So, Dad, can you describe Helgrammet and introduce your character, please?
Yeah. Helgrammet is a thrykeen, an insectoid race. Walks on two legs, has two regular arms, and then two smaller arms beneath them. He also has a tail, like a scorpion stinger. He has, of course, a carapace. What, is it chitin or chitin? I guess it's
I always say chitin, and I've never bothered to look up if that's okay. But I say that word a lot on this show in particular, and I don't think it's one of the many things I've been corrected on.
It's iridescent. It's kind of like, depending on how the light hits it, kind of orange or gold. There's a little bit of green in there. Big, great big eyes, couple of antenna, mandibles.
Love it.
Of course.
Instead of a mouth. Got to have the mandibles. That's mandatory mandibles.
Yeah, sure. That's why they're called that.
And he is one of the Skritch, which is kind of the colony of Thrykeen that he belongs to.
Amazing.
And which one of those aspects, Dad, gives you heroic inspiration to start this adventure?
Oh, don't get it twisted. He does have heroic inspiration.
I see that you've marked it on your sheet.
You made a character so good. You're like, I kicked so much ass. I'm going to give myself a point of inspiration.
He's inspired himself.
I don't know what you're talking about. There's no heroic inspiration on
awesome.
There.
That's so great. Okay, Helgrammet, you look up to this carving of your perfected sort of insectoid form, and you hear that voice rumble through the walls once again, and it says,
"The Octave thanks you sincerely for your vulnerability in these matters. You have but one more vision to face before concluding the trial of divination, and, well, this one's everyone's favorite. It is a vision of one possible future. The one that awaits you atop the ziggurat, should you outlast your 63 competitors. If you consent to receive this vision, gaze into the eyes of the statue before you. The exit is also available, but you'd be off your nut to leave at this point."
What do you do? That's not your voice, right?
No.
I thought, Dad, you have to understand, when you told me that you're playing Insectoid Thrykeen and you were like, get ready, I thought when you went, that was the voice you had chosen for the character for the whole season, and I got real nervous about
it. But no, that would be very difficult.
Sure.
I think Helgram is very hesitant. He's not that trusting a soul, but eventually he does look into the eyes.
And do you resist the psychic force that you feel upon you?
In for a penny, in for a pound. No.
Okay.
Bring it on, Hoss.
You look up into the eyes of your effigy, and you are somewhere very far away now. This world, the Fold, is defined by its magical abundance. It is a place where everyone, to some extent, possesses some supernatural thing that nobody else can do. You, Helgrammet, like every other aspirant here, You are familiar with the, like, flavor of magic, like what it feels like to break some physical rule of reality. In the vision you are experiencing, where you have claimed victory in the conclave and become one of the all-powerful octave, this vision you are feeling, it is not this usual flavor of magic. You know, this is something completely different. You feel a touch of godhood. And right away, you have the thought that this vision is making the power that you wield, the spell that you have sort of practiced furiously, feel pointless and insignificant. It is a trick. And this is not a trick or like a repertoire of tricks. This is a communion with the primal energies of magic. You can quite literally do anything, Helgrammet. You've just won the conclave. What do you do?
Helgrammet returns to the Scritch, returns to the colony from whence he came.
There are just like, describe where the Scritch live. Is it a hive situation? Is it a
It's a hive, more of, it's almost like an anthill. It's massive. And he goes into the tunnels. There are all these different chambers. As we'll find out, this is where he got his start, just as one of the lowly worker Scritch. Tending to the eggs in the nursery, they were called the bleh, these workers. So he was one of the bleh.
Okay. Do you have to say it like that?
Bleh. Bleh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Bleh. But now, seething with power as he walks through the tunnels and the passageways, the other Scritch are drawn to him.
Oh, for sure, dude.
For some mysterious reason, just kind of follow him.
I mean, not for some mysterious reason. I should make this clear. You are now one of the octave. You are one of the eight archwizards of the realm. You are not strictly a god, but I think thought of very much as a conduit to some sort of divine magical power. And the fact that a Thrykeen has won the conclave, it is like... I mean, it's the end of a Star Wars movie in here. There's jubilation,
right.
and fireworks and instruments made out of mushrooms and shit. People are very excited about your return.
So he actually, followed by this mob, walks into the chamber of the queen. Huge, great, big, gigantic chamber. And the queen is being tended to by smaller Scritch, fussing over her. And Helgrammet walks right up to her, but then turns his back on her.
Whoa.
And addresses the crowd and says,
Brethren and sistern Scritch, I come before you again. Changed individual. I am here seething with power, with magic. Lots and lots of it, like a buttload of magic. And I feel it is time for the Scritch to attain their place in this world. I am going to share this magic with all of you. I am going to elevate your power, and we can take our place as a mighty race. But before we can do that, I must have the mandate of all the Scritch. And to gain this mandate...
And he turns back to face the queen. And says,
we must overthrow the matriarchy and make me the king of the Scritch.
Without sweating your intrusion here and the mob that has formed the Queen of the Scritch, the Broodmother, a massive sort of indeterminate insect, Queen Larvosa, gestures towards you and says, "Sees him," and suddenly, a moment later, there are a dozen soldier ants, all wielding spears, all wearing the armor of their defeated insect enemies. They all charge you and try to hold you still with their spears. What do you do?
I am going to repulse them. Actually, I'm going to incapacitate them. I don't want to kill anybody. Well, what spells does he have at his command?
You can do anything. You have control over all magic that has ever or will ever exist. If you, we don't need to stick to 5e rules here. If you don't want to, I mean, or if you want to showcase your, you know, talent or whatever. This is an opportunity for you to do whatever the fuck you want. I am not going to worry about
make water.
I am going to turn to all these soldiers and mentally command them:
put down your weapons and stay your hands.
There is no resistance at all. They all drop their spears.
I wish not to use this power on the rest of you. I want you to come to me willingly. Throw off the mantle of being drones and rise with me, friends. Are you with me?
A little flea man raises his hand.
Aren't you mind controlling them right now? Which is kind of like drone business.
I wish not to control you, my wee friend. I want you to come to me willingly, and if you say yay, you will be the first of my converts.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, let's go.
Oh, you're in.
Let's go, baby.
You're in.
He hops forward. Yeah.
Juice me up.
What's your name?
Tyler.
It truly is a bug's life.
Tyler Flea. What about the rest of you? What about the rest
Doug,
of you?
Are I'm
you
with David. Me? I'm Ralph.
David. I didn't mean, you know, what's your
names. I'm Godzilla.
Fucking D&D rules.
It's me, Zora.
They all approach. I mean, this mob was following you at first with like almost sort of fan-like fervor, and now it has definitely morphed into something else. They see this flea man supplicate himself to you, and how thoroughly you have controlled all these soldier ants, and like everyone just walks forward and is just trying to sort of touch the hem of your garment. And Larvosa, from the dais on which she has sort of settled, she laughs and she says,
Hell Grammet, once again, controlling the bugs. Your society that you plan to build is not a righteous one, Hell Grammet. You only know control, only know how to control the bugs. This is no ant farm, Hell Grammet.
So you do not willingly surrender the crown to me. Am I correct?
Make an intimidation check, and I will give you advantage because you're a god man bug.
Use your inspiration, Dan.
Use your baroque inspiration.
Well, there's 11, and there is a 20, a dirty 20.
Dirty 20, okay. She reaches up with one of her many long, spindly limbs and plucks the crown off of her head. And she starts to hand it towards you, and then she says,
"Would you show me one last time the infestation
Elgrim.
Why, yes. As a matter of fact, I will.
And he concentrates, and from his hand comes a swarm of smaller insects, kind of swirling around, hovering in his hand like a mini tornado of these mites.
She looks up at it, fascinated, and she slides the crown over to your feet. And then she looks up at you, Helgrammet, and it is very strange because you, to some extent, know that you are having this vision, that you are seated in a room in the past and just sort of like witnessing this event. But as she looks at you, Helgrammet, you get the sense that she is looking at you, looking at this. You get the sense that she is staring intently at the you that is seated in this room of the trial of divination. And she says, "You could have been anything, and you chose this." And you gasp and regain your senses as you break eye contact with your perfect effigy, and the voice calls out and says,
"Aspirant, by your participation in the conclave, you invite death's shadow to fall upon you. You are extraordinarily likely to perish during these oncoming trials. You may lose your life. But what is that worth, now that you know what your life could be? If you agree to these final terms, grasp the hand-like appendage of your effigy."
He immediately grabs it, right away, no hesitation.
As suddenly as you grasp it, there is no flash of those onyx eyes, as was the case during those first two sort of agreements. Instead, just as quickly as you grab the hand, the effigy's hand grabs yours. The stony fingers wrap around your palm, and the leather straps that make up this gauntlet that your effigy is wearing begin slithering like snakes off of its arm and onto your arm, starting to sort of weave and reform this padded glove and these woven bindings tightly around your wrist and your forearm. And then you see a round leather plate rear up over your elbow. And as it does so, it reveals a thin metal probe on its underside. And the way that it is reared back, the way this needle is glistening, it is quite similar to a scorpion getting ready to sting. And it slams down into your elbow, and your ulnar nerve, your funny bone, lights up like a Christmas tree, and you lose consciousness immediately. When the three of you awaken, you are lying face up on a soft carpet of grass, peering upward at a cloudy afternoon sky. As you rise, you see your fellow aspirants coming to all around you. 64 wizards lie in a semicircle on the central lawn of the ziggurat, all facing the building's central structure. It is a tiered fortress, 100 yards wide, built from smooth gray stone that curves and slopes at inscrutable angles. As you marvel at your proximity to this place, the very seat of the Fold's magic, you also notice, as you sort of glance in your periphery, that the island is no longer floating in the waters of Loch Reach. It apparently took flight during your slumber. The island is sailing through the air. And remembering your slumber, you inspect your arm, where indeed a leather gauntlet has been fastened quite snugly. It's a beautiful, beautifully crafted piece of light armor with one strange feature. On the back of the glove is a hard plate dotted with these metal-ringed holes. And you identify them as mounts or settings for gemstones, which is a conclusion that you all draw as you realize that one of these holes has already been filled with a cloudy white stone about the size of a strawberry. You look up from your gauntlets as a door slams open from one of the higher tiers of the ziggurat, and all 64 heads snap to attention as 8 figures file out. The 8 archwizards of the octave hold court above you all, and a bald, wispy man, clearly the eldest of the group, steps forward to the edge of the tier, and his regalia is just flapping in the wind, and he says,
"Welcome, aspirants. I am First Octave Osham, and I am pleased to welcome you properly to the conclave. As I look around me, I feel a great peace knowing my replacement shall be chosen from such a capable assembly of mages. All 64 of you have passed the trial of divination, as is customary for these conclaves. You have all agreed to the terms and conditions of this contest, as has every wizard who has ever been invited here. But now it is time for the second trial to begin, and this one, historically, is unpleasant for our aspirants. We have arrived at the moment where our warnings become manifest, and the wheel meets the road. You must steel yourselves, wizards. Your very survival depends upon it."
And immediately, Osham is silhouetted in bright red light as the clouds far above the ziggurat explode outward in a circle, forming these concentric rings of clouds across the sky, like ripples following a stone's throw into a lake. And right where the clouds burst from, you see a fireball the size of a city block emerge and begin to fall in your direction.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.